You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, are comedians like Lucille Ball, Bob Hope, and Milton Berle coming to a concert hall near you for a night of stand-up comedy? Did the producers of Survivor absolutely blow it? You have to hear a guy rapping his order at McDonald's. And even if you hate rap music, you'll love this. And speaking of rap, more influence on music than the Beatles? Let's meet the friends, or shall I say friend. Aaron Myers is busy roaming the streets with a local TV camera crew looking for crime stories. So it's all balls all the time in the studio today. Here's Chris Martin.
The reports are in, Phil. Golden Boy Tom Brady was aware of Deflategate. The only question left to answer is, what's the appropriate penalty for playing with soft balls?
If you listen to the program on iTunes, thanks for leaving a comment and a review, especially a good one, even after that. You're helping this show by doing that because the folks at iTunes read your comments and notice your five-star reviews. So do we. Let's get things started. Chris, it's inevitable we're going to be doing balls jokes. But just the same, we're not the only ones.
No.
Tom Brady, he knew about this. The NFL concluded. Is that the fact? And so now what remains is the penalty. What happens to him?
Yeah, and that's the question. And that's all speculative, isn't it? It's subjective. Most people are going to say hit him with the max because most people don't like Tom Brady. I mean, that's just the general reputation that he has unless you're from the Boston, Massachusetts area.
Yeah.
So, just to give you some details, the official investigation into the Deflategate scandal is over. It's a 243-page report. It's been released out to the public. Basically, it says that it's, quote, more likely than not that New England Patriots personnel tried to circumvent the rules and that quarterback Tom Brady was at least generally aware of what was happening. The people responsible for deflating the balls were an equipment assistant and a locker room attendant. And they actually have evidence of Brady exchanging texts and phone calls with these two guys that were deflating the balls. And actually, those guys were sending text messages back and forth to each other, really bashing on Brady for him being pretty adamant about making sure his footballs were the right PSI.
So plenty of evidence, naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plenty of evidence, but at the end of the day, it comes down to these three people. It's not believed that anyone else participated or had any knowledge of the violation. So then you look at guys like Patriots ownership and Bob Kraft and the coach Bill Belichick, who said they didn't know and were appalled by all of this. Well, it looks like they really didn't know and had reasons to be upset.
Yeah, yeah. Is the NFL going to put its foot down on this? They're going to be real tough on maybe not the Patriots, but the personnel that was involved and Tom Brady as well. Do you think they're really going to smack down?
Well, it's just personal opinion, but yes, he's going to face some sort of game suspension, whether it's 2 games or 4 games or 8 games or
but the NFL, they're not going to let him off easy.
Yeah, it depends if you think 2 games is easy. Now, 2 games is probably appropriate. And is that getting off easy? What do you think, Phil?
No, I don't know. It's a lot of money. He loses a lot of money, and the team probably loses those 2 games.
There's a good chance of it. Yeah, Vegas already pulled their first game off of the betting schedule since this went down.
Yeah, so they should smack them down real hard. After all, this wasn't some minor offense like beating the crap out of a woman.
Right, yes. So let's take it seriously then. We'll see. He's definitely going to face some sort of suspension, probably fine. But who knows? I mean, he really is the golden boy. NFL is the one that loses if he has to sit.
Yeah, well, maybe they should just trade him to the Cleveland Browns. Would that be appropriate?
Yes, right.
Yeah.
That's definitely a punishment.
Right, or the Raiders. Yeah, all right. Hey, remember that that old lady that she ordered some coffee at McDonald's and then she proceeded to spill the coffee on herself and she scalded her legs? And she sued, and she won like a couple of $1 million out of court. Is this becoming sport for people these days? Because I hear there's another one of these cases.
There is, and it's not supposed to be. It's one of those things that after it happened the first time, as a society, we were shocked by it. And, you know, we said, well, you spill coffee on yourself. Now, I'm going to say this, because I'm going to tell you another story about someone else in a similar circumstance.
Yeah.
That lady that burned herself, she had third-degree burns. She was an old lady. She had terrible third-degree burns from her thighs to her ankles, basically.
Did she have butter legs?
She was old, you know, so at that point, your skin doesn't hold together as well against burns and cuts and things like that.
Yeah,
but she was really severely hurt, and now let's see if this guy was.
Yeah.
A North Carolina police lieutenant is suing Starbucks, of all people, after spilling hot coffee on himself. The coffee was given to him for free, by the way. He's free coffee.
They gave him free coffee.
Yeah, police lieutenant comes through. You throw him a cup, you know?
Well, don't throw it at him.
Right. Well, he was driving. He popped the lid on it. He spilled it on himself. In cross-examination yesterday, he said, "I didn't know it was that hot."
Excuse me?
Mm-hmm. "I didn't know it was that hot."
He didn't know that it's, well, in many states, it's probably not okay to be driving with a cup in your hand and opening the top while you're driving, right?
Well, when you're a cop, you can get away with those types of things.
Sure, you could talk on a cell phone. You could work on a computer while you're driving.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can speed. Yeah. You can burn through red lights.
Right. You could shoot at people.
They get to have all the fun.
Of course they do.
He is in legit pain. The burns caused his Crohn's disease to flare up, leading to intestinal surgery, Phil.
This guy should not be allowed anywhere near a Starbucks.
Why? Because he
I don't know. Look, if I'm walking down the street and I'm texting and I walk into a stop sign and gash my head open, do I sue the city for not warning me that there was a stop sign there?
I'm with you. I'm with you. This seems to be one of those common sense things. Let me tell you which angle he's taking. In the Starbucks handbook, it does say that all of the venti coffees are extremely hot and need to be fitted with a cup sleeve.
Yes.
A heat-protecting cup sleeve.
Did he have a cup sleeve?
He's saying no. Him and his defense team are saying no. He's also saying, this happened 2 years ago. Yeah. He's saying, look, the emotional distress my wife went through,
please,
the physical pain that I went through, the discomfort I had to experience at work, and it affected my work ethic.
Did he get a good cup of coffee out of the whole thing? Did he get some of it down at some point? Did he drink the coffee?
No. His body drank it.
Did, okay.
Yeah, his lower half drank it.
What a shame, really, when you think about it. You know, when I'm at home drinking coffee with the wife, or tea, whatever it is, I always wait a bit. I can't get the real hot coffee in my mouth.
When you go too quickly, it ends up down your chin and all over your
shirt. Exactly,
you
know? Because it's like, and you lose suddenly you have a drinking problem. But for me, my gums are sensitive, or my teeth, or whatever it is. But my wife, she likes it right off of the coals, man. If it isn't hot enough, if it isn't flaming, you know, and I don't know what her gums are made of and why her teeth aren't exploding from the change in temperature suddenly, but she likes her, and same with soup, and whatever it is, that hot stuff, it's got to be hot.
Yeah.
And so she would have a case if all of these restaurants, McDonald's, Starbucks, and whomever, if they ratchet it down from 180 degrees or whatever it is down to 120, she can sue. And say, my coffee's not hot enough.
That's right. Yep, that's where it's going next. And your wife does have different sensitivities. All people have different sensitivities, I guess, because I know what you're talking about. Some people can really put some hot
stuff. Yeah, because 200 degrees or so is scalding, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to burn you.
Yeah.
That's going to burn you. By the way, this police officer said he originally felt the trauma him and his family went through was worth $10 million.
Please.
He says, as the process went on and as they learned the system they were going through, they adjusted that down to $750,000.
Well, it's a good thing they weren't serving tasty pastries that morning, because his Crohn's disease might have been inflamed even further.
Right, yes. Hey, yeah. I just want to offer a warning to all the listeners out there. A few other things that are hot. Curling irons.
Yes.
You definitely don't want to touch those.
Don't touch a curling iron.
Cooktop stoves.
Good idea not to touch those.
Flames are coming out of them. And the sun.
Don't touch the sun.
Stay away from there.
If you can avoid it.
Yep. Could burn you.
Don't hold a magnifying glass directly over your head pointed at the sun.
Mm-hmm.
That could be a problem.
So be careful.
Yeah. All right. You kids out there don't know what I'm talking about. It was pastime. You know, back in my day when we'd go outside and we had to find a stick and that was our toy for about 3 days. If somebody gave us a magnifying glass, we'd go in the backyard and find ants or other animals, bugs, not animals, bugs.
Oh, yeah.
And shine the sun at the right angle into the magnifying glass and create a laser beam that would just pop the ants in half. Now, that was the kind of fun we had when we were kids.
Oh, the minute you discovered the power of the magnifying glass, I was entertained for hours on end, for weeks after
exactly.
weeks.
Exactly. And
until you burn something you're not supposed to. And
so compare that to sitting on an iPad for 6 hours a day. You know, who's a better rounded individual? An ant killer or an iPad user?
I'm going to say ant killer, Phil.
Me too. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, we were talking about restaurants and food and all of that. And who needs the liability? Who needs the headache? Who needs the lawsuits from idiots who come in and pour their food on top of them right after they order it, and then you're culpable? Who needs that? Oh, I think you need it because there's a restaurant chain putting up a fire sale of a whole bunch of their locations, and you can get in on it, and we're going to tell you which one it is next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling. Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, Immortal, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark.
All right, here we go. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, added.com. You're at our website. All kinds of fun stuff there. Check out the show fun page. We'll be referencing that frequently today. A bunch of interesting things there. Hey, for the past few years, people have talked about taking holograms of dead musicians out on tour, and thankfully, we've mostly managed to avoid that. But now, there's a new threat on that horizon. A place called the National Comedy Center is opening in Jamestown, New York next year, and the people behind it want it to feature a comedy club that would host performances by dead stand-up comedians in hologram form. Some of the names being tossed around include Milton Berle, Bob Hope, George Carlin, Rodney Dangerfield, and Lucille Ball. But nothing's official yet. All of their estates would have to agree to all of this. I'm sure big money would be involved. The plan is for the club to feature 10 to 12 routines of about 4 to 5 minutes each, allowing people to, quote, go back in time and witness a classic routine as if they were really there.
Now, this sounds like something that's going to work.
You think so?
Yeah, the holograms with the rappers and artists, singing artists, that's cool too. But comedy, I think that comedy stands the test of time a little bit better.
I think they're wise to go in five-minute chunks.
Exactly. Yeah, and if you combine those names that you're talking about, you know, you're not just going to go see just Milton by himself, but if you combine those artists together, those comedians together,
sure.
You'd have a heck of a show on your hands.
Yeah, and then you know what you could do to promote things? You can get a comedian who everybody thinks is dead but is still alive.
To host it, and like Louis.
And come out and do 5 minutes, and then all of a sudden say, hey, wait a minute, I'm right here.
Yeah, right.
Uh-huh. That'd be good. All right. You know who Kylie Jenner is, right?
I do.
She's got plump,
big fan. Big fan.
She's got big plump lips.
Yep.
And all right, kids, stop doing that little thing with the Dixie cup or whatever it was. You know where you were plumping up your lips and all of that. Apparently, if you want to look like Kylie, you actually do have to use temporary lip fillers. Kylie now admits to using them on, and she will do this on the next episode of Keeping Up with the Kardashians, and she says, quote, it's just an insecurity of mine, and it's what I wanted to do. So there you go. She admits plumping up her lips.
All the more power to her. There's plenty of people out there getting plastic surgery of all different sorts, and I got to say, her lips are pretty attractive.
Yeah, they're nice big tooth pillows, but just the same. You know what you should do is if somebody says, you've had some work done. Just cop to it.
Yes.
Because you don't look like how you used to look like.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Something's different. People notice it. It's obviously not the moisturizing cream that you're using.
Yeah, because it's just worse later when you have to do one of these and then everybody thinks less about your integrity.
That's the first thing I thought of when you just told us that story, Phil, was exactly that. Like, here's this young lady that is saying, well, forget it. I'm just going to be honest about this so I don't have to keep answering the questions all my life and try to lie over and over.
Yeah. So, but what are you going to do to get ahead these days? You know, she's keeping up with the Kardashians, for one, but she's keeping up with all the other reality stars out there. They've got to have something to offer the people. And so, to one degree or another, they've got to be fake to keep up, right?
You have to stand out. You've got to be beautiful.
Now, how do you keep up in this world? It's a dog-eat-dog world, and we hate working for the man, so why don't we become the man and get ourselves a fast food restaurant, Chris?
Yeah. Yeah, you want to get into the fast food restaurant?
I'd love to do that.
Yeah?
Sure.
What about Wendy's? Would you want to get into Wendy's?
Is that where they sell the square hamburgers?
That's the square hamburgers.
And the salad bar and the potato bar, right?
Yeah, served to you by a redhead.
Yeah.
And a guy with white hair and glasses.
Yeah, they got to be redheads
Dave
behind
Thompson.
The counter?
No, just if you're going to be in the commercial, you have to be a redhead.
Was it Thompson or Thomas? Dave Thomas?
Oh, Thomas. Excuse me. Yes,
he's
Dave
a dead
Thomas.
Comedian now. He's not around. He died, right? Okay. Can we bring him back in hologram form?
A lot of charity happening in that guy's name.
If too. I buy a Wendy's, can I have a hologram of Dave Thomas at my Wendy's?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a draw.
We're going to throw that in.
How much?
You know, I don't know how much the stores are going to cost. You have to figure that to get into a franchise. It's north of... $1 million, maybe $1 to $5 million. I'm not exactly sure what, because you have to buy all the supplies and
sure,
it's a piece of property that you're investing in.
Yeah,
but Wendy's is planning to sell 640 of its restaurants in the next 2 years, something like 380 this year, including 100 in Canada.
How many do they have? Is that all of them, or just that big chunk of them?
No, Wendy's has well north of 3,000 restaurants.
Wow.
Yeah, wild, right?
That is
hard to imagine that they had that many. They say that it's going to reduce company operating costs, yep, reduce capital expenditures, grow and strengthen franchise base. Their stock went up instantly.
Yeah, of course it did.
So they released a bunch of stores to the market. You know, Wendy's is one of those places that was almost all internally owned.
Yeah.
And I guess it's more expensive to run things that way as opposed to just handing it over to the public.
Yeah, well, that's expensive too, because then you have all these individual franchisees who potentially could ruin your good name.
Yeah, you got to teach them, right? Isn't there training that goes into that? You have
sure
to make sure
is.
That they follow your system.
But your results may vary. It's one of those things where you go, the one franchise is just everybody's beaming. They've got smiles on their face. The place is clean and the food is delicious and well prepared. And they've got a letter A grade out in the window if they do that in your part of town. They do that in Los Angeles County and other places here where we are, where the health department comes over and gives them a grade. If there's a C on the wall, you say, that's some extra flavor.
Think I'll pass.
Yeah. So franchisees could screw things up in a big way, especially, you know, what happens. You know, somebody who's first generation here, you know, and they want to get ahead. They come to America to get ahead. You know, they heard that can happen because it wasn't happening where they came from. But they had a little bag full of cash. They buy themselves a Wendy's, and then they do things the way they did things back in old country. And the folks who are accustomed to a certain style of service and food at a Wendy's see something completely different. And that could mess things up.
Yeah.
It might be better. You never know, but it could mess things up.
Sounds like financially it's going to work out for them, but we'll see what it does to their reputation long term. Have you ever had Wendy's, Phil?
Oh, sure.
You have?
Okay, I've had a double square hamburger before.
Me too.
Yeah.
More than once.
And I've been to the potato bar.
It's one of those guilty pleasures.
Do they still have the potato bar?
They still serve baked potatoes. I wish
Erin was here because she's an addict of this stuff. You know why the ladies go to Wendy's?
No, why?
They get the French fries and that.
The soft serve.
The milkshake or whatever it is, and they dip their French fries in the ice cream.
Yeah.
And that's a Wendy's thing.
Salty and sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good combo.
Here's some random stuff for you. You may not know this. The words idiot, imbecile, and moron.
I've been called all of those.
Were once actually assigned to specific IQ ranges.
Wow.
You know, this was before we became sensitive to people's mental deficits.
And feelings, personal feelings.
Yes, right. You know, we used to just tell it like it is. Yeah. You're either an idiot, an imbecile, or a moron.
Right.
Okay. Now, an idiot on the scale had an IQ under 20. Now, what's a good IQ?
I think 100 is, you know, somewhere between 90 and 100 is pretty average.
Pretty average, yeah. And your Mensa if you're up around 140, right?
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so under 20 is an idiot. An imbecile has one between a 21 and a 50, okay?
Okay.
IQ ranges. Right. A moron, which I think might have been a lot of people, frankly, is a 51 to a 70.
Yeah. Lots of morons out there.
Yeah. So a moron is smarter than an imbecile. An imbecile smarter than an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
So when somebody calls you an idiot, you idiot. You could probably think your way around that insult, because my guess is that your IQ is not below 20.
Yeah, you have enough comprehension to be able to give them a good comeback.
Like, you imbecile.
Yes.
Don't call me an idiot.
Exactly. Yes. Moron.
Yeah. No, wait. Oh, that's an upgrade. One more thing. Who's the idiot who came up with the name Jurassic Park for the movie?
It's Spielberg, isn't it?
Was it Spielberg?
Yeah, he maybe didn't come up with the name.
Well, almost all of the dinosaurs featured in Jurassic Park lived in the Cretaceous era, not the Jurassic era.
What's Cretaceous?
It's just another era. It's there were no the creatures that were roaming around in Jurassic Park wouldn't have been around in the Jurassic era.
Is it crustaceous?
No,
it's Cretaceous.
It's Cretaceous.
Huh.
Cretaceous. You moron.
I wonder what existed around that time. Why don't you tell me, you idiot?
Hell if I know. You know, I really don't know. I do know one more thing. These are more random things that you could just walk into the office today and people will for sure know that you're not a moron because you know all these little tidbits of information. The word hello hasn't been around all that long. It's only been around since 1883.
Oh, yeah. Before that, everybody said, what's up?
Yeah, what's up? Or they said, hey!
I wonder what they did say before hello.
Yeah. Greetings to you, sir.
Yeah, that's probably it. Yeah, I think you just nailed it.
Yeah.
Greetings.
Or if you were a little kid sitting on a curb, you'd say, howdy, mister.
Right, yes.
Uh-huh. That's what they all say.
How you
right?
doing, Dennis?
All right. Boy, that first half hour went by real quick, didn't it? And the chances are pretty good that you saw the new Avengers movie. You saw that, right? Mm.
Yes, sir, I did.
Good stuff?
Oh, yeah. It was intense.
Yeah. Well, the interest in that has settled a bit. But is there really any reason to go back to the Cineplex this weekend except to see Avengers again? Manny the movie guy says yes. And he joins us live next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Here we are. We're glad you're here. I'm Phil. That's Chris. We're the friends today. Aaron has the day off. Thanks for tuning in. It's time to see what the movie companies have in store for you at your local Cineplex. Joining us live is the only Filipino on the planet who had no doubt Pacquiao was going to lose to Mayweather.
That's right.
KMAR-TV Palm Springs movie reviewer, Manny the Movie Guy. Hello, sir.
The only Filipino named Manny who probably doesn't even know how to punch.
Yeah. No, you don't have a right cross or a jab, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Good to know. Manny, we'll get to the one movie that's opening in wide release this weekend, but I want to ask you first. Avengers set box office records last weekend and this week. Will it hit $300 million by this weekend, and will it be the fastest a film has ever reached that plateau?
You know what? It's going to... Okay, it made $188 million on Sunday. This coming weekend, it's going to fall probably by 60%.
I checked the numbers. It's at about, today we can assume it's at about 235 or 240.
So it's going to make $300 million by the weekend.
It is, yeah.
Here's the deal. You know, it made a bunch of money, but it still didn't surpass the original Avengers take of $201 million. Many were saying that it's probably because of the fight of the century which took away a little bit of thunder from the fight of the century.
Yeah.
It's the Avengers, of course.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think, but it still is the second biggest blockbuster opening ever.
Right. So. Okay. And it's doing well. By the way, Furious 7 is at about 340 or so. It's been out for a few weeks, but
it is the fastest one to climb 200.
Yeah.
Before Avengers came.
How about that? Yeah. Right. Now this weekend, Sofia Vergara and Reese Witherspoon try to do what Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy couldn't do: give birth to an enduring female buddy cop franchise.
That's right. You're very right. Sandra Bullock and Reese Witherspoon are pretty much interchangeable in these films. And it's kind of funny that the director of Hot Pursuit is Anne Fletcher, who gave us The Proposal in 2007. But let's get the ugly out of the way first. Hot Pursuit is a predictable, formulaic comedy, but I would lie to you if I say I didn't laugh, because I did many times, and that's largely because of the chemistry between Witherspoon and Vergara.
Oh, good chemistry, huh?
They do have great chemistry, and I love their banters together. You know, Witherspoon is a by-the-book cop assigned to protect the widow of a drug boss That widow, of course, is played by Vergara. Now, nothing is left untouched in the movie, from underwear to drugs. The two act as our crazy travel companions as they race through Texas, pursued by crooked cops and mysterious gunmen.
You say nothing is left untouched. Do Sophia and Reese touch each other?
Well, the actresses are even game for their fake make-out session.
Oh.
And when I ask them about that, like, you know, everyone will be talking about your makeout scene. How is it kissing each other? And they both said, you know, they're quite delicious. Each other is quite delicious. And Witherspoon even cracked a joke saying that she doesn't know why Vergara kept on asking why, kept on requesting a makeout scene with her.
Oh, really? Well, I can't imagine why somebody wouldn't request that if the opportunity was given.
That's right. Now, see, here's the deal. I like Witherspoon's self-deprecating humor. She's been called so many mean but funny things in the movie.
Yeah.
One of which, of course, is she sounds like a little robot.
No.
All of those little, you know what I mean? It's funny. And Vergara is a natural comedian.
Yeah.
A good road trip buddy comedy is only as good as its cast. So let these ladies drive you to this cliched but laugh-out-loud comedy. It's a good diversion from all the male-dominated movies this summer.
Good, 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 good. Hopefully you can understand everything Sophia is saying, because sometimes she talks a little quickly.
Oh, if you can understand me, you can understand her.
Oh, okay. Good. I hear you loud and clear.
Oh, there you have it.
You know, if you ever wonder what it would be like if the governor of your state was actually a zombie, you might have that opportunity this weekend. Is that right?
That's right. I you know, there's a bunch of limited releases this weekend, but one is a great standout, and that is called Maggie. Now, in case you're not tired of the zombie craze yet, how about this film? It's only in limited release, but I enjoyed this one. It stars Arnold Schwarzenegger as a dad who will stop at nothing to save his daughter, who happens to be infected by a deadly zombie virus that's sweeping the nation. The daughter is wonderfully played by Abigail Breslin, all grown up from Little Miss Sunshine.
Oh, that girl.
Yes, that girl.
That's one of the best movies ever, Little Miss Sunshine. Yeah.
Now, the pace is a bit off, but hang in there. Schwarzenegger and Breslin will break your heart, and deep inside this film is a meaningful, thoughtful picture. It's a low-key zombie movie with fine performances. Check out Maggie when it comes out on demand. It's also coming up on demand this weekend.
All right, so I won't be disappointed then. It sounds like Arnold is either going to become a zombie in the movie, I don't want to be a spoiler, or he gets real close to being eaten by zombies, right?
Well, he ditches all his Expendables outfit, and he plays a farmer, an aging farmer in
the
film.
All right, so he gets a pitchfork to fight off the
right.
I love that.
Very good.
I don't know if you've seen it or not. I saw a trailer for a new Jack Black movie, and I got to tell you, I wasn't impressed. Is it called D-Train?
The D-Train, yes.
Have you seen that one yet?
I see films not yet, because it's not coming out in Palm Springs in the next 3 weeks. So, but I'll watch it next week.
Yeah, all right. Well, you report back to me on that one, because if the trailer, usually they put the best stuff in the trailer. And so if that's as good as it gets, I don't hold out a lot of hope for this one.
Right. It's Jack Black and, of course, James Marsden.
Yeah. All right. Well, Manny, no more fights to bet on, at least for the moment. I hope you made a killing.
I should have bet on it, really.
Take a swing at it next time, will you? Come on.
Well, that's right.
All right. We'll talk to you next time. And everybody go to MannyTheMovieGuy.com and see some of his interviews. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right. There we go. How about that, huh?
How about that? You know, I sent out a tweet after watching the Avengers.
Yeah.
I said, just watched Avengers Age of Ultron. Lost all spatial awareness, had a seizure, and developed a twitch. All in all, not a bad movie.
All in all. All right. That's good. I like that tweet. What's your Twitter address?
It's at Chris Martin Show, actually.
At Chris Martin Show. Yeah. One of these days, you'll get your own show.
One of these days, I'll have more than 40 followers.
Yeah. Wow.
That's my goal.
Follow the poor guy.
But I still have less than 100 tweets. I only tweet once or twice a week.
Well, so what's the point in following you then?
Yeah. Well, because the one or two are just gold. Didn't you hear what I just wrote?
You want to be absolutely frightened out of your pants?
Sure.
Mother's Day is this coming Sunday.
Mother's Day. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I know you are scrambling for gifts and where you're going to take mom for brunch or for dinner. But the bigger question is, the bigger question for you is, how's your relationship with mom? Or if you are a mom, how's it going with the kids? Room for improvement on both sides? An expert on improving parent-child relationships joins us next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, Speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Here's something for you. Approximately 0.7% of the people in the world are drunk at any given moment. That's around 50 million people. At any given moment, drunk.
Yeah, that's an incredible stat. What's more incredible is that 0.7% of the population is 50 million people. How many people are on the planet?
About a couple billion.
I guess.
Isn't it?
It's a lot. I think it's somewhere between 7 and 10 billion. Actually.
Is it really? Because there's more than a billion people just in China.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere between, I think it's between 7 and 8 billion people.
Yeah, so something like 7 out of 100 people.
Yeah.
No, that's not right.
No.
7
no.
out of 1,000 people.
That's right,
yeah.
7 out of 1,000.
Are drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. All right. So get together 1,000 people, and 7 are having a party.
Right.
By the way, a little later on the program, Survivor. You know, you watch that TV show? What are they, in season 25 or something? Something, they've been on a long time. Jeff Probst and, watching people running around stinky on an island and naughty bits falling out of their badly fitting outfits.
Trying to perform incredibly difficult tasks.
Yeah, and trying to survive before they're, eaten by wild animals. Survivor is letting fans pick the cast for next season, but that might have led to a major spoiler for this season. We're going to talk about that a little later in the show. And our executive producer, Mike Stark, is a Survivor super fan. He says he's the number one Survivor fan. and he's going to chime in on this because he's outraged. Hey, Mother's Day is this Sunday. So here's our attempt at being sensitive to that because Lord knows we're not prepared, as usual. So joining us now, to guilt us into honoring mom properly, is a theater artist, a playwright. Her first memoir, What I Thought I Knew, received the Elle Magazine Literary Grand Prix for Nonfiction, was one of O, the Oprah Magazine's 25 Best Books of Summer, and was one of Salon's Best Books of the Year. She's written for Nickelodeon, CTW, and CBS, and has toured her plays nationally and internationally. Her latest book is called The Year My Mother Came Back, and that book's available in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Alice Eve Cohen, welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And we're delighted to have you on the program. I have a lot of questions for you about parent-child relationships, but I want to explore your book a little because I think most people can relate to it on one level or another. And it seems to me, and I wonder, Alice, if I understand the theme of your book correctly, and we'll get to the supernatural aspect of it in a moment, but life gives us all kinds of opportunities to look inward, to make some changes that would improve our relationships, whether we're the parent or the child. But isn't the biggest challenge seizing those opportunities rather than always looking outward?
Yeah, I think seizing opportunities is exactly right. And sometimes the opportunities come at the most surprising times. Sometimes you can have a crisis and you think it's the most terrible thing in the world, but a crisis is often a catalyst for change. And it's so hard to change. It's so hard to look at things in a different way. And it isn't always the case with a crisis that there's a silver lining, but when there is an opportunity to take a bum time and turn it into an opportunity, turn it into a catalyst to look at things differently, to think about meaning, to think about past relationships, to think about what you can do differently in the future, I think that's a great thing.
Give me an example of a catalyst.
Well, in this book, The Year My Mother Came Back, I was having a rough summer. Summer of 2008, my younger daughter was about to have a difficult medical procedure to lengthen her shorter leg, 8 years old. My older daughter, age 18, was about to leave for college, and a week before she left for college, she told me she wanted to find her birth mother. At the same time, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so it was a triple whammy, a really complicated time for me as an individual and as a mom. And in that moment, literally the moment that I got the bad news call from my doctor, I had a flood of memories of my mother, who had died 30 years earlier, who I pretty much put out of my thoughts. And I also had vivid fantasies of her, which led to some dialogues with her in which I really looked back with her and reconstructed what went wrong in our relationship and what I could learn from it in the present. So in that way, a crisis, a series of multiple crises, and all happening in the same summer, became an opportunity, a catalyst for change.
And what sort of clarity came to you?
I think I realized in looking at what had been a complicated and combative relationship with my mother, at least during my adolescence. She had had breast cancer herself. She'd been a wonderful, adoring mother when I was a child, and then she became kind of remote and angry, and she was quite devastated by her illness. And so for a long time, we weren't close. And when I looked back from the vantage point of adulthood and motherhood, I was able to be empathic, to understand what she had gone through in a way that I just wasn't able to when I was an adolescent. Yeah. And even when I was 22, when she passed away, I just didn't have the maturity or the life experience to understand what her struggle had been.
A lot of lessons learned and a lot to pass along. And let's see if we can do that now. How big is trust in a parent-child relationship?
I think it's paramount. I think I was a relatively slow study. When my older daughter was a kid, I thought I knew the answers. I thought when she was a little kid, I could, for example, choose the best school for her. And in a series of what I can see now are quite comical incidents, my little girl taught me that she knew. She intuitively knew what was right for her. Took me a while to figure that out, but I finally caught on, and it benefited her, and it benefited me, and it benefited my younger daughter when I realized I had to stop for a moment and not automatically say, nope, this is the right move. I had to listen. I had to take that moment, find out what my daughters intuitively knew was right for them. 9 times out of 10, they had absolutely the right choice.
You stop trying to be the perfect mother, right?
In the story of my book, that was one of the biggest learning experiences. I was chiding myself for being an imperfect mother, for being distracted, for being ambivalent. I never had forgiven my mother for the same things, which I thought were, you know, terrible crimes of motherhood, but really they're not. And so when I was able to understand that my mother was simply a human being, in some ways a fantastic and courageous pioneer in many different respects, but human, with human foibles, I was able to forgive her. And almost at the same time, I realized I had been angry at myself for the same things I'd blamed my mother, and I was able to forgive myself and relax and be more spontaneous with my kids and accept myself and my imperfections and extend that to my entire family. And I think it benefited all of us.
Your youngest is what, 14, 15 now?
She's 15 now.
Yeah, I've got to believe she loves being the subject of your books, huh?
If I can, I told my husband and daughter at dinner the other night that I was submitting with my colleague at work. We're submitting a panel proposal for a big writers' conference, and it's going to be on the subject of memoirists writing about family members and the ethics of that. And they both burst into laughter because they love to tease me about this endlessly. And they said, oh, well, we're going to have a panel conference across the hall from your panel conference, and it's going to be all the family members of the people on your panel. We're going to be telling the real story. So I thought that was a brilliant idea.
That's good. So what's the best advice for sons and daughters when they look at their mom and all that she's done for them, and especially at this time, we're coming upon Mother's Day this weekend?
Well, it's hard for children and for teenagers to see their parents as fully dimensional, holistic human beings with inner lives and outer lives, but one day they will understand. And I think, of course, if children can realize that their parents love them very, very deeply and also accept that their parents are going to make mistakes. I think that's part of loving each other, yeah. is to not demand perfection, is to accept that we are humans with imperfections and foibles, and we're all equal in that venture of kind of traveling through this unpredictable journey called life and this very unpredictable journey of parenting. And we should cut each other a little slack, and when there are problems, we can laugh at that and think about the story value. And if they're genuine problems, we can all work very hard to try to repair them.
The book is The Year My Mother Came Back. Alice Eve Cohen is the author. Her website is aliceevecohen.com. We have that linked on our links page, and the book is in the store at philhewlettandfriends.com. Alice Eve Cohen, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me as a guest.
And so how do you feel? Did we do a good job?
Was good.
Ourselves up that we are sensitive to what's happening this weekend. And, Mom, thank you very much.
Yeah, and sensitive, I actually look at it from a standpoint to where I feel like you have to celebrate all the mothers that are close to you in your life.
Yeah.
It's grandmothers, it's aunts that took care of you growing up or always thought about you.
Mm-hmm.
It ends up becoming quite an event.
Yeah, there's some great mothers out there, too. Great mothers, great fathers. And sometimes they do things that you just can't, it makes you scratch your head. Like, how in the world did they get out of mother and father school and qualify?
Like the one that left her child in the car so she could go booze it up?
Yeah. Well, see, I'm looking for this one story, and where the heck is it? Hang on a second. I'll bring it to you any second now, because it's worth it. Okay, that's not it. And that's not it either.
Give me a hint.
Well, two parents were busted for something. And
oh.
I want to tell you what it was. And I wish I could find it. Where the heck is it?
Were they doing the dirty?
No, that's not it.
Were they robbing a liquor store?
I found it. Found the story right here. Remember when you were in school and your parents would take you out for ice cream and if you got good grades?
Sure.
Right? Times have really changed. Chad Mudd from Largo, Florida, and his wife, Joey, have 13 and 14-year-old daughters. And apparently, they've been bribing their girls to do chores and to get good grades. And you know what they've been offering them?
What's that?
Drugs.
What kind?
Well, after the cops found out about this, Joey admitted that she'd smoked weed with her daughters 5 times as a reward for them.
How old again are the kids?
13 and 14. And she used it as, quote, a bargaining tool. Now, Chad took it to the next level and did cocaine with his daughters as a reward. Now, they were both just arrested and charged with child abuse and drug possession. And there you go. And they're in Florida.
There you go. Yeah. What are you going to say?
I don't know.
Hey, children are inspired now.
Put on your spoiler hats because you won't want to hear what we're going to say about Survivor coming up in our next segment. Because that's it for hour one of the show. There's a lot more coming, including the new words added to the dictionary. And who's had more sexual partners, you or your parents? Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends. Coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show, where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, the oldest living veteran offers his secret to a long and happy life. We had the dad with the Camaro. Now it's a former Olympian who employs a unique method of extracting his kid's loose tooth. And the Survivor spoiler of the century, foisted upon us by Survivor. Wonder if they meant to do that. The friends are here. Well, actually, no, they're not. Just one friend. So we have friend, Chris Martin, and I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. Aaron Myers is out working for Channel 5 in Los Angeles in one of those TV news vans.
Received the last-minute call, did she?
Last-minute call. They had some story. We'll find out what it is, I'm sure, next week. But whatever it is, it's not worthy to get onto this show. She hasn't called. Don't know what it is.
Part of being in that business, though, isn't it? It's almost like having a beeper on you. You're on call all the time.
She could be covering just a cat in a drain or something like that, you know?
Well, that's exciting stuff.
Sure. Kittens in a wall. Those are the stories they send her on.
Those are her favorite types of stories to cover.
Of course they are. No, but, you know, it's probably death or something like that. You know, that's what the TV news likes, reporting death.
It is true. Death, crimes.
Yeah. So if you like seeing the worst of humanity, you tune into the TV news.
Until the very end when they show you a surviving...
Right? And now puppies.
Yes.
Yeah. That's how you fix it. You fix everything that way. By the way, other than Ronald McDonald, can you name a McDonald's character more famous than the Hamburglar?
What's the big purple one?
That's Grimace.
Grimace.
Yeah. And then there was what? Mayor McCheese, right?
Oh, yeah. I remember that. He's got a cheeseburger head.
Yeah, he does. Well, anyway, Hamburglar. He's been in exile for a while. They haven't used him in an ad since 2002. That's like 12 years ago, 13 years ago.
It's because he's a criminal, Phil.
Exactly. What kind of message is that sending the children? First of all, you got to stuff your face with the fatty foods, and then you got to be a criminal.
Yeah,
but he would never get to keep his burgers, though. That was the storyline.
Yeah, it always got taken from him before he got a chance to eat it, right?
Exactly, yeah. Now, yesterday, McDonald's announced that Hamburglar is making a comeback, and he looks a little different. The Hamburglar, you remember, was cartoonish. He had a giant round head, one tooth, and a goofy smile. Some freckles, too, if I recall. The new Hamburglar, he's a middle-aged hipster.
Huh.
And if you'd like to see a picture of him, we have it on our show fun page at philhewlettandfriends.com. The guy playing the character in the commercials isn't wearing a big funny mascot head anymore. He's just a regular dude with stubble, and he's got a black mask over his eyes and a hat and a striped shirt, but also has skinny jeans and red leather high tops.
Is that what constitutes a hipster, Phil?
Skinny jeans?
Skinny jeans and facial stubble?
Yeah. And shoes that draw attention to the fact that you have skinny jeans on.
Because I've always wondered, how do you define a hipster? I mean, I hear the word, and I feel like I could even pick one out in a lineup. But at the same time, I'm going, it's not.
Yeah.
There's no list of features.
No, I think you just get a sense. Your hipster radar goes up. And then, by the way, one more thing about Hamburglar. He's a dad now.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
Raising little criminals for the future.
Yeah, so he's going to start starring in commercials and see if you fall in love with the new hipster dad. Hamburglar.
We'll find out. I'll have to get a look at him.
Yeah, yeah. McDonald's is often the source of news, isn't it?
Yeah, one of the largest fast food chains on the planet. And actually, they're in the news because someone else put him in there recently. A New York rapper who goes by the name of Hi-Rez. He went into McDonald's and found a clever way to get his McDonald's fix. Have a listen.
Actually, let me get 2 Big Macs and 2 apple pies, a little bit of Sprite and a side of fries. Let me get a McDouble, let me get a McChicken, hot sauce, make sure that shit kick. And I want a McRib before a McPiss. Let me get a hash brown if it is a lunch head. If it is, I'm a bean mix at an upset. Let me get some nuggets too. I want a bun cake and a parfait. 2 of them, I really had a hard day. Let me get a McCafe latte and a couple hundred large shamrock shakes. Powerade, high C, ranch snack wrap on the side, please. Let me get a burger with a slice of cheese, but no onions or pickles, so hold that, please. I want a McFlurry, 2 of those. Want M&M, want Oreos. I want everything on the dollar menu and a burger with jalapenos. Let me get a snack wrap for my backpack, better not test that. Add dust sauce, no after. Taking everything to go, so pack that in a black bag. High res eating all the flapjacks. Did you get all that?
What? Say what? What do you want? Okay, now wait a minute. When I just speak slowly and say 3 items, they get it wrong. They're going to get that order correct?
No, I think it was all for show.
Yeah.
And that's what he says at the end. He goes, did you guys get all that? And of course. They all just laughed
not.
And clapped and said no.
Yeah, a couple hundred frozen rocks he wants in his drink. Did you catch that?
I think it was shamrocks.
A couple hundred shamrocks?
Shamrock shakes or something.
Yeah, in his shake, yeah. Something, a couple hundred shamrocks in his shake.
Yeah.
Do they put the little green candy things in the shake? Is that what they do?
The Shamrock Shake is a chocolate chip mint shake.
Oh.
Oh, and it's excellent.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. There's no better ice cream than chocolate
chip mint. Is this a big guy? A big boned kid?
No.
Rapper? No?
No.
Skinny kid?
Yeah.
That's way too much food.
Skinny kid with like the flat brimmed hat turned backwards, clothes a little bit baggy, but obviously very talented. I mean, you know.
Now, that's not a hipster look, is it?
No, that's the rapper gangster look.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah.
And I know not everybody is a fan of rap. Understandably, but that takes talent to do what he just did.
Yeah, it does. You know, and if somebody comes into my, let's say from the first hour, we bought a Wendy's and somebody came in dressed like that and started rapping. What I don't know. I might be inclined to call the cops.
Well, anymore, it seems like you almost expect that stuff. Honestly, the guy at the register just has his head down. He's smiling a little bit.
Yeah.
He knows that this guy is going for a viral video. It's obvious. And as a society, we recognize that now. It's like, get out of the way. Let this guy do his thing so he can get a couple million hits on YouTube.
Yeah. But see, I'm obviously outside of the bubble on this because rap music has had such a big influence on American culture and on music, hasn't it?
Bigger than most people recognize. It's so big that they actually performed a scientific study to see just how influential rap music is.
And no kidding. Science looked at it.
That's right. Yep. Scientists got together and they actually came up with a study that they say shows that the emergence of rap music made a bigger impact on music in general than the Beatles.
Than the Beatles.
Yes. How do you like that?
I don't like it at all. I don't think it's right.
Apples.
I don't think it's accurate.
Researchers analyzed 30-second clips of roughly 17,000 songs from the Billboard Hot 100 charts from 1960 to 2010. They found that the rise of mainstream rap in the early 90s was, quote, the single most important event that has shaped the musical industry of the American charts in any period.
All right, let's put this to the test. I think the way you look at it is if you look at the larger universe of popular music, every single song in popular music, and you say, how many of those songs can you hear a direct link back to rap music as opposed to a direct link back to something maybe the Beatles did? Now, the Beatles have their influence as well. But is it easier when you look at the whole of popular music to draw a line to the Beatles or to rap music? And I don't know, is rap music is only a percentage of popular music out there. Can you draw a direct line, a fatter line to that music than you can to the Beatles? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I think the Beatles are a bigger influence on the whole of popular music since the 1960s, if that's what the science is, than rap music.
I agree with you 100%. And I'm a huge music fan. I mean, I like rap and just as much as anyone else, but they even combined the Beatles, Rolling Stones, The Who, other bands that came over in this British invasion. They grouped those guys together in comparing them with their influence against rap. And I'm telling you, there's no way that rap has a bigger influence than that group.
And when
of
did
bands.
Rap start again? When was what was the
this was based in the early 90s.
Genesis of rap music was
sort
what?
Of late 70s, early 80s was I think when like Rapper's Delight and some of the real early stages of rap came out.
Yeah, they heard Walk This Way by Aerosmith and they said, "You know what? That Steven Tyler, he's onto something."
Well, so they actually did a remake of that.
Sure they did, with Run DMC.
Run DMC.
Yeah.
And not a bad one.
And I wonder if that was a nod to the old school, so to speak. That was the OG rap right there, because that was a rap style that Steven Tyler was singing there. And it was basically, what was he doing? Like nursery rhyme style, right?
Yeah. And he's always had that talent. He still does it to this day, Steven Tyler.
So he's a rapper. He's a rap star.
But I think you're right, because you look across the music landscape, you have... Even you have reggae, you have country, you have rock, you have alternative. None of these have a rap influence, really, at all.
And there's
how can you compare that against one genre?
And
of music?
Look at all the you left out heavy metal as in very
heavy metal,
many cases as a classical music influence.
Oh, and I love me some good heavy metal, the older stuff.
And
like
look
the
at jazz. There's no reference to anything in jazz, really. That's just their charts and improvisation and all that sort of thing.
But you know it's there. The influence of it is there.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially from a tempo and percussion standpoint.
I think we could argue this all day long.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do it till we fight.
Right. You know what? You know what else we could argue all day long is whether Survivor, the people that produce Survivor, have completely lost it. Is this the beginning of the end for one of the most popular reality TV shows ever? We'll talk about that next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
How do you stop a killer who won't stay dead? When you mix high-tech medical science with a psychotic killer, you get Immortal Fear, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark. This book has been described as heart-pounding, captivating, provocative, a modern high-tech version of Frankenstein that explores the line between life and death. Full over-the-top action and adventure with vivid storytelling. Immortal Fear is a fast-paced page-turner. I love thrillers, and this book was amazing. I could not put it down, and neither will you. It is riveting, completely engaging, and will have you on the edge of your seat. This is from the best-selling Dr. Paul Power series, which is top-rated on Amazon and is highly recommended for anyone who likes mysteries and thrillers. This is a clever whodunit that is brilliantly written. The ebook is available at Amazon. Immortal Fear, Immortal, a medical thriller by H.S. Clark.
Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and friends. Hey, advertise on the show. There's an idea. For as little as $5. What? Phil? $5? Yeah, what's the point of that? Well, it's true, though. For a limited time. Go to the Advertise With Us page at philhewlettandfriends.com. Read about it. And there's some advertisers on there already that you can support if you are in a supporting mood. If you're a big fan of Survivor, and who isn't? The show's been around forever. I can't imagine that you've never seen at least one episode of Survivor, perhaps an entire season of Survivor. Last night, Survivor, the host of the show, Jeff Probst, you know who he is?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of the most powerful guys in television.
He sure is.
Has to be. And seems like a fairly cool dude. We should have him on the show someday and just talk about stuff other than Survivor.
I'll reach out to him.
Will you?
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Anyway, Probst announced that they're letting the fans pick the cast for next season, which they're calling Survivor Second Chance. Now, I guess the theory behind that is they'll get 32 contestants, 16 men and 16 women, who were all on Survivor in the past, but they didn't win, so they get a second shot at it. So the viewers will vote on 10 men and 10 women for the final cast, and everyone on the ballot has two things in common. They've only played once, and they didn't win. All right, so there's the setup.
From any season, any previous season.
Any previous season, okay. Which is interesting because two of the candidates are Mike Holloway and Carolyn Rivera, who are on the current season, and neither have been eliminated yet.
Uh-oh.
And this is as of last night. They're still on the show last night. That means next Wednesday, when the show airs again, Mike Holloway and Carolyn Rivera, Mama C, as she's known, will still be on the show. And they're on the second chance. Again, you've had to have only played once on Survivor, and you had to have not won to qualify for this ballot.
So you're saying if you're placing bets on who's going to win this season, don't put it on Mama C and
Mike Holloway.
Mike Holloway.
Yeah, neither of them wins. Unless it's all a big ruse. Is it possible? Mike Stark, our executive producer, is America's number one Survivor fan.
Well, I'm up there. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. Now, Probst was asked about this, and he said, quote, "As you would expect from Survivor, we found a way to add a little twist, a little layer of mystery into the second chance voting."
Okay, and what's the mystery?
The mystery is there's no mystery. They screwed up.
Yeah, they absolutely screwed up.
I mean, it ruined the show, right?
Yeah, and you know, it gets down to a final three. What if the final three are the two that you just mentioned?
And somebody else. Yeah.
It's over.
Right. Why watch
the finale?
Why watch anymore? Yeah. Exactly. So,
is this irreversible damage, Mike? Can they do something to correct this, or is it just too late?
Well, no. Unless, like Phil says, there's some sort of twist in this. But
I'm looking at Mama C's Twitter page right now, and it says, and a tweet from her, 19 hours ago: "Vote every day for Mama C." So she's in on the fun.
Right.
On the second chance fund. She wants people to vote for her. She wants a second chance because
absolutely.
She knows she lost because they taped this thing 6 or 7 months ago.
Well, it'll be an interesting finale because Jeff will have to explain his way out of it.
Sure he will.
Because that's the only opportunity he'll have because everything else has been pre-taped.
And in the finale, again, if you're a Survivor fan, Jeff Probst addresses any kind of weirdness or controversy.
That's right.
They don't shy away from those types of things.
No,
and I think that's his style.
That is his style.
Yeah. It's a reality show. Might as well face the reality.
Absolutely.
So will he say, Mike Stark, that the show screwed up?
I think he will. I do. I think he's an out front kind of guy, and we'll definitely do that.
Yeah. All right.
Well, then it'll be an endearing moment. Are these good characters, Mama C and Mike? Are they?
Oh, yeah.
You like them?
They're entertaining.
Well, they're entertaining characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that Mike's days are numbered.
Yeah. He's not the best player ever, and neither is Mama C, for that matter. There's some better, more tactical players on the show.
But that doesn't mean they couldn't win it, because there's all sorts of things that happen that change the whole mix anyway.
Sure.
So.
You could wake up one morning and get trampled by a wild wildebeest.
Right.
And they have to call in the medics from Australia for whatever reason. They're always from Australia.
Always from Australia.
Yeah, and they come in, and Jeff Probst asks the question, let me put it this way to you. Are the injuries serious enough to where Mama C will not be able to continue on the show?
Well, Jeff,
in the best, my Australian accent is going to devolve into pirate in a hurry, so I just want to do it.
Absolutely.
Well, Jeff, looking at her vitals and the severity of the wound and the fact that her pancreas is right there on that rock over there, I'd say, no, I'm going to have to pull her from the game.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's how it goes usually.
And then there's crying. And,
yes, exactly. And everybody says goodbye, and they pack up the pancreas, get on the boat, and they go.
That's it.
Yeah. Or I would imagine those players, they're pretty vicious too. I mean, there could be an unexpected backstabbing out of the blue that does keep other players in the game, right?
I'm surprised nobody has actually physically hurt somebody. It happened a few seasons back. There was a moment where somebody almost went homicidal.
Right. Right.
And I forgot who it was, but it was just a nutcase.
Yeah, it was the other nutcase's nephew or something.
Yes,
it?
Exactly. I forget the name. But if
you're a Survivor fan, you know exactly who we're talking about.
Yeah, he went absolutely bonkers. The schizophrenic guy. He was a bipolar at the very least.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
You know what we call that?
What's that?
Great television.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yep.
That's for sure. Okay. Well, are you going to keep watching, Mike?
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
You'll cut them a...
I'll cut them some slack. Yeah. I love Jeff Probst as a host. I think he's... You know, I tried to watch The Amazing Race a couple seasons.
Yeah.
And that host just aggravates me for some reason.
Yeah. I mean, he's just there
as a
fixture. Probst is part of the show.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
People memorize the things he says.
Right.
You know, from I'll Go Tally the Votes... to come on in, guys.
Yeah,
right?
Right.
and there's so many things that he says. And they even work some of his sayings into the game somehow. Sometimes
that's
you
true.
Have to fill out make up a puzzle, and it's something that Probst says all the time. So he's part
it's
of
a
the
fun
game.
Show no matter
and
what.
And then he dates the contestants.
Well, he did. I think he's married to somebody else now.
Who wasn't a contestant?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, okay.
But he did date contestants.
Yeah. Well, he gets to size them up.
He gets to pick of the litter.
He gets to see them naked.
It's one of the perks of being the show producer, host.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway.
Clause in his contract.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Right. Just look out for the claws when you're on Survivor. You might get clawed. Okay, Mike, thanks for the Survivor perspective. Again, Mike Stark, America's number one Survivor fan, and our executive producer. Hey, you know what? Speaking of phrases and terms and all of that, the folks over at dictionary.com have come up with some new words for us. They're now officially words, Chris. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we come up with the words as a society, and then the dictionary people do everything they can to try to keep up with all these new words we keep using regularly. And dictionary.com just updated its dictionary with a bunch of new modern words, and here are a few of the highlights.
Okay.
Number one, life hack.
Life hack.
It's apparently a tip, trick, or efficient method for doing or managing a day-to-day task or activity. This one baffles me because I thought life hack was when somebody stole your identity.
No, that's just a hack.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've heard this term, life hack?
Sure, I have. And they show you like a better way to fold your T-shirt, for instance. There's a life hack right there.
That word doesn't make sense to me. The fact that hack is in it as one of the synonyms.
Remember when we had that thing where you fold a piece of paper and you use it as a bottle opener?
That's a life hack?
That's a life hack.
Oh.
Makes your life easier, something that you didn't know 5 minutes ago.
I would have picked a better partial term than hack.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's,
suffix.
It's, slackers are coming up with this tough stuff anyway. So.
Well, speaking of slackers, number two is slacktivism.
Slacktivism?
This is actions taken to bring about political or social change, but really require only minimal commitment, effort, or risk.
Yeah, there you go.
There's lots of that, right?
In other words, complain a lot and don't vote.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's the whole, Wall Street? What did they do on Wall Street?
Yeah, I know. The people in the pup tents in
the
park.
Yes. Yeah. Sort of...
you know, sit around and be a nuisance.
The 99 percenters who went to other 1 percenters for help?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Number 3 is smartwatch. I'm not going to read you the definition of that one. I think we all know what a smartwatch is.
Yeah, that's a term. It should be in the dictionary.
Number 4 is basic.
Dude, that's basic.
That's exactly right.
Really?
That's how they're using it. Yeah, basic characterizes predictable or unoriginal style, interests, or behavior.
Really?
The word basic is obviously already in the dictionary. This is just an alternate definition.
All right.
Two more real quick.
What else?
Docs, D-O-X,
yeah,
to publish private personal information of another person without the consent of that individual. Docs.
Docs, D-O-X.
Yeah. I thought that was revenge.
Can you use this in Scrabble?
I don't know. And then the last one is esports.
Esports? Like
competitive tournaments of video games.
No.
Esports is what it is. But it's spelled E-S-P-O-R-T-S, so I just want to say esports.
It's like if you have a bad Spanish accent. Let's go to the esporting arena.
Yes,
right?
Let's go watch some esports.
Yes, right. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Apparently it's okay for the feds to spy on our junk.
That's gross.
Yeah, and other uplifting tech stories are coming up next. With our tech dude, Jeremy Antecone. That's right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, and that's a good thing because you need to know what the feds are up to when it comes to your private stuff. So let's talk tech. Joining us live is the head of mobile at Apogee, our tech dude, Jeremy Antecone. Jeremy, hi.
Hey, gang. How are you?
Doing great. Even better now that you're here. So thanks to a court ruling on the NSA's data collection practices, we have a clearer picture as to how private our private stuff is, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine much of anything is private anymore. But as you mentioned, a federal appeals court in New York overturned a lower court decision that ruled that the NSA's bulk collection, the metadata that they're sweeping up about everybody's phone calls and where they are and so forth, is not legal. So this is an interesting one. Of course, the NSA scandal was really brought to light back in 2013 when former NSA contractor Edward Snowden revealed all of these things that many people just simply didn't know, and that the government was essentially spying on American citizens and collecting all kinds of information about their day-to-day communications.
So what's just so that I'm clear on this, is the NSA allowed to collect data or is it not?
So here's the problem. The three-judge panel said that this is definitely not legal and that it has gone beyond the scope of what should have been allowed. But they actually opted not to block the program. They're kicking it back to Congress for them to debate and decide how to proceed. So
and doesn't the Patriot Act work into all of this? That perhaps there's a gray area that it may be illegal but okay under the Patriot Act. Or not.
Lots of people are pretty uncomfortable with the fact that the government is collecting all of this data. So
yeah.
Glenn Greenwald, who's the journalist that broke the story back in 2013, tweeted out something earlier today saying, shouldn't Snowden now be treated as a whistleblower instead of a criminal? And
yeah,
that's kind of an interesting thought.
Right. Well, I think if he hangs out long enough, public sentiment and perhaps Congress will come around to treating it as such. And he's still in Moscow, as far as we know.
He is stuck in Russia. I think they gave him a 1-year asylum.
Yeah.
He's playing the waiting game. You're right.
Yeah, it's probably wise to do that because sooner or later, after everything shakes out, we'll figure out who the good guys and the bad guys are.
Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Absolutely.
Now, Jeremy, I understand you're having lunch in a couple of weeks with the CEO of Apple.
I wish I was. That would be awesome. And, I think that this is a very cool thing that Tim Cook does. He's actually done it several years now, where he actually puts up a charity auction, and this is benefiting the Robert F. Kennedy Center for Justice and Human Rights. And essentially, you're given the opportunity to...
Well, let's roll back a minute there. We want to make sure we get this opportunity figured out, Jeremy, because we lost your connection.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, start over now. Every year, we're given the opportunity to do what, Jeremy?
to go to Apple's headquarters and have a one-hour lunch with Apple CEO Tim Cook. So this is something he does every year. This year it brought something like $200,000 for a one-hour lunch with Tim Cook. And the funny thing is on the fine print, it says, every effort will be made to schedule this experience at the earliest possible date, convenient to both parties, but it may take up to 1 year to schedule based on availability.
Yeah, Tim Cook, I imagine, is a busy guy. And so this person who forked out the $200,000, it's not you.
It is not me.
Oh, what a shame.
So it would be fun to go.
Yeah, I bet it would. All right. But what was your ceiling on the bidding?
I think it was something like $500.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a pretty tasty lunch right there, $500.
I wonder if he could do better by doing a raffle, though, where maybe a ticket is $500, right? And then you get your name picked
out of a hat.
Out of a hat. You might get more money than $200,000. I bet there's a lot of people interested in that.
See, that's a wise move. I think you're making a lot of sense there, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
So, Jeremy, science is a wonderful thing, and the advancements are coming so fast, it's hard to keep up. For example, is it even possible to improve upon one of the greatest inventions of recent days? Is it even possible to improve upon the selfie stick?
Yes, Phil. Yes, it is.
I think Jeremy just got hit with a selfie stick. Did you hear?
Awful.
Oh, there it is. Okay, retake. Okay, take two, Jeremy.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Selfie sticks are just plain awful. I'm not a fan of them. They've already been banned in tons of places. The Smithsonian, London's National Gallery, the Palace of Versailles.
Yeah.
You can't use them there.
But no photo, no selfie stick.
This thing takes it to a whole new low. It's called the selfie arm. And it's essentially a prosthetic arm with an outreaching hand and a mount that you put your iPhone in. So when you take your selfie, it looks like you're being embraced by a plastic mannequin.
Oh, gosh.
our society is doomed.
Yeah, it is. Really, it is.
The selfie arm doesn't look at all human. Is it just totally unrecognizable as being a mannequin arm?
The thing is that the focus of the photo probably will be on you in slightly further focal distance.
Mm-hmm.
So it may not be directly in focus. But, I mean, it's a creepy looking thing, especially if you pull this thing out of your suitcase. I mean, pull this thing out of your.
Yeah. Yeah. What is that? Is it a selfie stick? Is it a sex toy? The TSA people aren't going to know. And they might think that the airport is in danger, and they'll just confiscate it, and there. It'll be an embarrassing moment.
The purpose is to take a selfie that makes it seem like you're with somebody else, like you're in a relationship?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times...
I'm holding hands with somebody.
A lot of times you meet a celebrity, and you want to jump in and see if that celebrity will let you take a selfie with them.
Yeah, but where does the selfie arm come in for that?
I don't know. Maybe you write somebody's name on it and say, hey, look, there's proof.
Look, they wrote their name on their arm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just so bad.
It is
so
bad. It is bad, Jeremy. I get it. And thank you for bringing it to our attention. We will try to forget that you ever did that. And we won't hold it against you either.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Well, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again next week and see what else is happening in tech.
Talk to you then. Thanks,
all right.
Guys.
All right. There goes Jeremy Antacuni. And so, Chris, the... one thing that people do, we were talking about airports there a moment ago, is they smuggle stuff all the time.
Yep.
They smuggle plants. They smuggle animals. Sometimes you hear about the guy with the snakes in his pants. That guy always gets caught.
Sure does.
You know, because once the TSA feels you up, they always go for the pants and they say, hey, what the heck is this?
I've been mistaken as that guy a few times.
Have you? Yeah. All right. So there's something new, and it's disturbing, frankly. And what is it that people try to smuggle and how they do it?
Well, you're right. We try to smuggle all kinds of things. And if you've ever wondered how to smuggle a cockatoo, I'm going to tell you how. You cut out the bottom of an empty water bottle and you shove their little heads inside and you leave the cap off the top of the bottle so they can get some oxygen while the rest of their body is completely enclosed around the plastic water bottle that once said Aquafina or whatever on it.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
Dozens of cockatoos were discovered stuffed into 1,500 milliliter plastic water bottles in an anti-smuggling operation in Indonesia just a couple of days ago. The cockatoos, which were listed as critically endangered, were cut free from their plastic surroundings. Oh. They were still alive, but many of them very, very weak.
Oh, my gosh.
Are you kidding me?
Animal activists everywhere are up at arms. Apparently, there's a big demand for exotic birds, especially in Asia and Europe. And I think not to eat them or do anything creepy like that, but to just have them as pets or to fill out petting zoos or new attraction parks that they're putting together over in those areas.
Sure.
And wildlife trading has become big business. And the thing is most of the wildlife trading that's happening, they're going out in the wild and they're capturing wild animals. They're not breeding, you know, appropriately. You should just get docile animals together and breed them and then put them in the park.
You know, if you come over to my house, I have a coffee table completely covered in scientific journals.
I believe that.
And there's one called, one of the more fun journals, scientific journals to read, is the Archives of Sexual Behavior. But generally, I keep that on the bottom of the stack, so it's not right there in case the kids come by. But, you know, a couple of adults sitting around, I say, hey, get a load of this.
Check this out.
Yeah. So the folks over at the Archives of Sexual Behavior did a study, and they answered the question, who has had in their lifetime more previous sexual partners than either you or your parents? Who has had more? And they have the answer. Science. It's in the Archives of Sexual Behavior journal. And we have the answer to that question next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door. And the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, it's our final segment on this episode of Phil Hewlett and Friends. We thank you for tuning in. And don't forget, subscribe to the show. Okay? Click that little subscribe button. And you could find plenty of ways to subscribe on the How to Listen page if you've got a favorite player that you use, your iTunes or your Stitcher or your whatever it is. Everything's there. Spreaker, right? Tune in.
So many outlets now.
Subscribe. It's so much easier to get the show. You never miss a single one. You can listen when you like to. Well, this is a horrifying thought right before Mother's Day or any time of the year, really. According to a new story, a study in the Archives of Sexual Behavior journal, your parents got it on with more people than you ever will. The average person born in the 1950s or 60s, okay, now they're talking about me and you, executive producer Mike Stark.
Well, you're a parent, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a parent. Apparently, I'm a parent. So we're talking about folks my age, Chris, as opposed to you, your age.
Yeah, you could be my dad.
I could be. Average person born in the 1950s or 60s had sex with 11 people. The average person born in the 70s had sex with 10 people. The average person born in the 40s had sex with 10 people, which is odd. It seems like folks in the 40s didn't have sex.
So far, the 60s are the most promiscuous.
Yeah, well, we can imagine why that was. It was the age of Aquarius. You know, everybody was love and flowers and drugs and, you know, whatever. No rules.
Yeah, hippies.
Meanwhile, people born in the 80s and 90s only average 8 sexual partners, which is weird because people born more recently are more tolerant of premarital sex.
Yeah, but that's when some of the major diseases that were pretty scary were really hitting the scene.
Yeah. Now, 58% of people born in 2012 said that there was nothing wrong with sex before marriage. 58% of people in 2012, not born in 2012, but people in 2012 said there was nothing wrong, compared to 44% in 2004, 41 in 82, 38 in 78, and 28 in 72.
It's a lot of numbers, Phil.
It is. So acceptance of getting nasty before marriage has more than doubled since the 70s, but people aren't actually acting on it. But how do you define sex here? I have to go back and read the article in the journal over and over again to double check on this, because it seems to me like folks are doing certain favors, if you will, instead of handshakes these days. Hello, how are you? Oh, okay, fine.
But they're not going all the way?
Not all the way. They're just, oh, you want to do that? Okay, good. I'm down with that.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that maybe that's not listed in here, because it seems like there's a great deal of acceptance and tolerance for that sort of behavior.
Yeah, sort of third base behavior, we'll call.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. All right, so Chris, moving on to other stories, while we're talking about sex and sexy things, the music world and the romantic music world has lost a biggie.
Yeah, one of the greats. Errol Brown is his name.
Is that how he pronounces it?
Is it Errol?
I would call him Errol.
E-R-R-O-L.
That's Errol.
Errol. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's the lead singer of the 70s funk band Hot Chocolate. And I believe
in miracles. Oh, I know this song.
Put out this gem. You sexy
thing, you. I believe in miracles. They play this at weddings to get the mom and dad to come out and dance, right?
Movies, commercials. We've all heard this gem.
Yeah. Did Hot Chocolate have other hits? We don't know. Was it a one-hit wonder?
They were best known for You Sexy Thing. It was a top five hit in 1976, but like I said, it's, you can't avoid it even today. And it's still got a good groove to it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I like that jam.
Right.
I put it on my list of music to download.
Now, was that song influenced by rap or by the Beatles?
No, that song was influenced by the evolution coming from the Beatles.
Yeah.
That's right. Before rap really even existed.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Yeah, 76. I don't think there was a lot of rap going on around there. But, yes, he did pass away. He was 71, so he lived a long and fruitful life.
He owned a good chunk of that song, because you hear so many of these stories where there was a gigantic song and the guy sold it for like $10 and somebody else made a ton of money with it. I wonder how he did. Hopefully he did well.
I'm hoping so, too. I'm with you. Yeah. I hope that he got to experience all the wonderful things that come from putting out a song like that. Quick side note, the band actually got their start when John Lennon heard their reggae version of Give Peace a Chance, so I guess they...
There's a Beatles influence.
I think they were influenced by the Beatles.
Yeah. Okay, good.
That got them signed to Apple Records.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Good jam. Everybody go listen to it today in memory.
Yeah.
Of old Errol.
Speaking of old, Richard Overton of Austin, Texas, is the oldest living veteran in America. He served in the Army in the South Pacific during World War II from 1942 to 45, and he turns 109 years old this coming Monday.
Well,
so clearly, he's led a healthy life of moderation and balance.
It's the only way to get that old, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, it is. So check out his routine. He still puts whiskey in his morning coffee. He drinks a little more whiskey at night to help him sleep, and he still smokes at least 12 cigars a day.
Yeesh.
He's been smoking them since he was 18, so for 91 years he's been smoking 12 cigars a day. His friends and family threw him a birthday party last week and went all out for it. His neighbor had a local burger joint cater it and also managed to get President Obama to write him a letter. Richard says the secret to a long life is to never stop moving, keep drinking whiskey, and keep smoking cigars. And he hopes everyone who was at his party this year can make it back next year for his 110th birthday, where they'll be doing whiskey shots.
Goes to show you that doctors don't know squat, all this stuff, and all these nutritionists and health activists.
I agree, you know, and stop getting all up in arms about stuff. You know, people are going to do what they're going to do, and you worry about what you're eating. You're probably knocking years off your life worrying about what you're putting in your tummy.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't worry about it, so maybe you kick a couple of days off your life, just eating what you like to eat.
But you sure did enjoy the ride.
Right. Might as well. You know, what's the point of living if you got to eat food that you don't like? And you got to sit there and be grouchy, and gosh, I wish I could have a shot of whiskey. No, that'll kill you. Well, yeah, but sitting here wishing I had a shot of whiskey will kill me too.
I'd like a shot of whiskey and 10 cigars.
Yeah.
That part's a little extreme. How do you do 10 cigars in a day?
No, he does 12 a day.
12 cigars?
Well, you think that's if you're awake for 18 hours a day, that's like an hour and a half a cigar.
An hour and a half a cigar and nonstop. You're just lighting one off the butt of the other.
Yeah.
there's just no stopping.
Think he's a smelly dude?
Yo, could you imagine somebody that smokes 12 cigars and then washes it down with whiskey?
It's one of those cigars, you know, they're getting all wet and there's like the wet chewed up tobacco on his lips and in his teeth. You know,
sure.
The guy, what I'm talking about? I mean, we're not talking about those Tipperillos with the filters on them. No, he's probably got those big, fat, leafy cigars with the tobacco juice all over his gums.
You just dark, chocolatey, you know, cigars. Yeah. Thick smoke filling the...
Come here and give Grandpa a kiss.
His smoking room. Ashes all over the floor.
Yeah. That's what the whiskey's for. It clarifies the tobacco junk out of his mouth.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the cheeseburgers are to get some nutritional value.
Guy's living the life.
He sure is.
And God bless him for fighting in World War II and having a long and healthy life and having a looking forward to next year. All right. So, people get up in arms and it seems like they want to call the child services on you anytime you do something with your kid that doesn't conform to the way you think you should be raising your kid. But we had the guy with the Camaro a couple of weeks ago who tied the string to his kid's loose tooth and then he floored it and the tooth came out. Well, we've got another perhaps more creative way of taking out the loose tooth.
Yes, we do. 35-year-old Brian Clay is an ex-Olympic gold medalist, won the gold medal in the U.S. decathlon in 2008. Also ended up taking silver in 2004. Now he's retired because, of course, 35 years old. You can't be an Olympian anymore at 35 years old. But he is keeping busy. And on Tuesday, he helped his daughter get rid of her tooth by tying one end of a string to her loose tooth and the other end to a javelin.
A javelin.
One of the areas that he excelled in the decathlon. He posted the video on YouTube. He's standing about 12 feet away from her. He flings that javelin as hard as he can, and her tooth doesn't come out, so it actually pulls her 10 feet in the air and drags her 40 feet across the field.
It does not.
Just kidding.
No,
tooth popped right out.
It worked just perfectly. In fact, the kid's cute. You need to hear what she says. It's not on YouTube, though. You have to Google it, and I think it takes you to his Twitter page.
Right, yeah. If you search for what you use javelins for once you're retired, you'll see him throw a javelin and pull his
it is on YouTube, but a bunch of pirates have taken his Twitter feed and then they string it along to their own channel. So after you're done watching that, then you have to watch bad Russian wrestling or something.
So they're making it tough for us common folk to have viral videos.
Exactly.
Because they just steal it and post it somewhere.
By the way, a woman in Florida was being held hostage by a boyfriend Monday, but she convinced him to let her order pizza with a Pizza Hut app on her phone. Then in the comments, she asked them to call 911, and it worked. The cops saved her, and the boyfriend's in jail. She used her Pizza Hut app. How about that? Hey, we love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. Twitter, we're at Faf Show, and facebook.com/philhewlettandfriends. If you listen to us on iTunes, please leave a comment and a review. Thank you. Leave us a voicemail. It's free on the website. Look for the blue tab. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Aaron Myers and Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.